Hey everybody, quick introduction to today's episode with my guest Tom Otten. Tom is an ultra marathon runner and some of you may recognize him from my photos from completing the Dubai Marathon in January earlier this year. Tom is also the person who gave me the drive, goal and ambition to do the Marathon de Sabla, the 250 kilometer self-sufficient race through the Sahara Desert. And every once in a while, you'll meet someone in life that makes you change the way you see things or makes you level up as a person. And Tom has been that person for me over the last 12 or 18 months. He's inspired me greatly with his outlook on the world and battling cancer to change the way that you see everything. He's a big believer in the excuses that you make today become regrets later in life, and that you need to be able to understand the difference between real problems and perceived problems, and how that can move your life forward or move your fitness forward or move your business forward. How you do anything is how you do everything. I love this episode. There's times when I was just transfixed on what Tom was saying, and he's had such a huge impact on me over the last 12 or 18 months that I've been dying to bring him on the podcast. And he's the founder and managing director of the Create Media Group, a digital communications agency in Dubai. So his schedule is nuts. So I've been so happy to be able to nail him down for an hour and get him on the podcast. And I hope you all get as much value as I did recording it, and a little bit of a sneak peek into some of the things that have changed my mindset over the last 12, 18 months. So without further ado, I hope you enjoy this week's episode with my guest and close friend, Tom Otten.
You're listening to the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where Irish fitness entrepreneur Brian Keane answers your questions and interviews leaders in the world of fitness, health, mindset, and natural wellness. Come join the fun.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where we talk everything fitness, nutrition, and mindset to help you with your goals. I'm so excited today to have my guest with me, my friend Tom Otten. Tom is founder and managing director of Create Media Group, a digital communications agency based in Dubai that handles the digital marketing for some of the world's leading brands. Some of you may recognize Tom from his incredible TEDx talk, The Power of Adventure, which you'll hopefully see after listening to this episode, is why he is one of the best people to talk on the topic. On top of running his agency in Dubai, Tom is also an extreme ultramarathon runner who scales mountains in his spare time. I met Tom at Tony Robbins' Business Mastery Conference last year in Amsterdam, and he was the one who told me about the Marathon de Sabla, the 250-kilometer self-sufficient race through the Sahara Desert that I ran in April. And his influence, help, and support was an integral component to me crossing the finishing line. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot, Brian. Much appreciated, mate.
Tom, I've talked a little bit there about your background, but tell us a little bit more about yourself, just for those of you who don't know who you are or don't know about you. Tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Sure. Look, originally from UK, without going into too much detail, I bounced around quite a lot as a kid, as an expat. I've ended up in Dubai. I've been here for, we're pushing about 12 and a half, 13 years now. So it's been, it's been quite a while.
And you've been living over in Dubai but you've been into sport and fitness for a long time, and we'll get into your ultra marathon running. What got you into kind of fitness first? What kind of got you into that space?
Sure, I think it's an upbringing, being in sort of fairly sunny climates, always just outdoors kicking a ball around one form or another. A background being Welsh, rugby was obviously a big part of me growing up. So I used to be very much sort of rugby orientated. So when I moved to Dubai, joined a club, that went quite well. Used to play for many years. And then moved into sort of more of the sevens side of things and played for the national team over here for a little bit. So that was always my core focus kind of growing up. And then around that, obviously, goes the gym work, the additional training, and just sort of trying to push performance as much as possible in that space. That came down to, came crashing down once I got tackled quite badly, snapped my knee in multiple places, and that put me out of rugby. And that pretty much ended my career as such. So at the time I was getting a business off the ground. I'd been ignoring it mostly because I was so focused on the rugby side of things. And part of my rehab, I started doing just some jogging and some running. Did a little bit more of that, kept pushing it. And then actually another guest that you've had on previously, a guy called Marcus Smith, him and I are good friends over here in Dubai. And I was chatting to him over a coffee and said, mate, no, at some point I really want to do a marathon. You know, and I kind of put that up on a pedestal and thought, shit, you know, I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to actually get to that. It seemed something kind of unachievable at the time. So I'd always been sort of very sprint focused. And he was the one that actually pushed me into the first marathon and said, look, there's one coming up in 6 weeks. Why don't you just have a crack? See what happens. Now, you go through you start to get sort of those insecurities. You talk yourself down and you're like, oh, there's no way I can do it in that sort of time period. But then just kind of got through it. It went quite well, really enjoyed it. And then it all kind of started to go from there.
So, yeah, for those of you listening, a lot of you have already listened to the episode with Marcus Smith, Finding Your Everest, because Marcus is fucking awesome too. Like, you and him are just like two of my massive motivations for just getting shit done, and I love it. So, you did the first marathon. How did that one go for you? Which marathon was that, and how did it go?
So, it was the first, it was a Dubai marathon, which fortunately, it's at the time of year, the weather's pretty good, and it's a very, very flat course. I mean, Dubai is flat as a pancake. So, it went quite well. I broke the 4 hour mark, which is what I was aiming for. And then just thought, okay, well, let's kind of use this as the focal point. Now, I'll dial it back a little bit. And you mentioned the TED talk and where kind of that motivation comes from, kind of pushing things, lack of balance in certain areas, but then and certainly in the physical side of things, trying to squeeze as much as possible out of life and trying to do as much as I can in those spaces. I was diagnosed with cancer about 10 years ago, and you know, fortunately for me, it was operable, and I went through that process and bounced back from that fairly quickly. But it did have a quite lasting effect in terms of mindset, and it really pushed me to sort of reassess life and sort of reassess what I wanted out of life, what goals sort of aligned with me, and sort of what I needed to do to achieve those. So I'm very goal orientated because of that. And after the rugby kind of finished, it was I really needed something else. Outside of work, and like I said, I'm quite imbalanced in the way that I approach things. When I'm focused on something, I'm kind of all in to the detriment of things. And you know, I know you talk about relationships and all sorts on your podcast. I've gone through quite a few of those because of that mindset, but have achieved in other areas. So the way that I look at it is there's always sort of micro imbalance, but then there's, as long as you get that right, there's macro balance. So over time, you can balance all these different areas of life out, from fitness to work to personal life to whichever other elements are important to you. But I think if you don't focus in certain areas and don't really double down for shorter periods of time or even medium periods of time, I really don't think that you're ever going to achieve anything in any given space. You end up going to be average across all of them. And I know it's something that you and I have spent a lot of time talking, and I know you have a very similar thinking, and I know you're very dedicated and focused in the spaces that you operate in as well. So, that's kind of why I ended up going into the physical side of things after rugby and kind of pushing the marathon. And then, like I said, the first one went quite well, and I kind of felt like it was within capabilities. So then, kind of the mindset kicks in, and then you start to think, okay, well, if that went quite well, what's possible? If I really focus in this area, you know, what might happen? And then it kind of grew from there. So just did my actually did the first ultra with Marcus. We something popped up on Facebook, and I sent him. It's a funny story actually. I sent him an email, and I forgot to put the link in it. So I sent him an email, and it was like 100K Brecon Beacons, 7 weeks. And I said, actually there wasn't even that much detail in it. I was like, ultra marathon Wales, 7 weeks, link below. And I forgot to put the link in. And before I realized that and resent the email with the link in it, I got an email back, one word, in. And that was it. And then that was it. He didn't even know what he was signing up for.
I messaged him. That's so funny. I literally messaged him on Wednesday. I was talking to you on Wednesday or Thursday. And we were recording this on a Friday. And I messaged him. I was like, do you want to do the Connemara Ultra Marathon? And he was like, when is it? I was like, April. He was like, all right, can I stay at your place? I was like, yeah. He was like, cool, I'm in. I'm like, right. I was like, do you want any more details? He was like, no, I'm good. I'll see you in April. I was like, amazing. Okay. That's his philosophy, though. It's very much an all-in approach. Tom, I absolutely love, I made note of that line, micro imbalance from macro balance. I've never heard it worded that way. And one of the reasons that I gravitated so much to you when we met first was I saw that imbalance in a positive light, that nearly obsessive, when I'm going for something, I'm all in on this, and very, very tunnel vision. And I'm very, very attracted to that in a personality trait in people, because it kind of mirrors back on me on how I want to live my life. I love that line, because when you're microly imbalanced and you're focused on the things you want, you can have everything, but you do need a little bit of obsession up front, because otherwise you don't really strive for getting out of that comfort zone. And I think you're a living testament to it. Talk me through how those few weeks before your first marathon looked. Did you train much for it? Did you just jump in? What did it look like?
Sure. To be honest, I didn't really know what I was doing then. So I think the issue I had, because I was only, I think, five and a half, six weeks out, and I thought to myself, well, I've never run any distance. And when I term distance, I mean anything over, I think the longest I'd run was about 12K, something like that at that point, and that had been sort of quite a while ago. But I knew what I was capable of in terms of the fitness space from sprints, for example. You know, when we're doing, you know, some of the international sessions we were doing with the sevens team were just brutal and pretty disgusting. So I thought that, okay, well, mindset would be okay once I get myself into that space, but I do have to change my body, my fitness type in order to match what's in front of me. But I also was very aware of the fact that because it was such a short time period, if I got injured, I didn't have enough time to recover. So I knew if I went in too hard, too quick and picked something up, that was me done. So I kind of looked at it and I thought, well, if I go a little bit softer and then like try and ramp it up to like closer to the time, and then just take a few days off beforehand and hope that was a strategy that would work. And you know, unfortunately it did. I know you focus a lot on the nutrition side of things. For me, I know it's the same as it is now. I'm very, I'm low carb. I eat a lot of fats. There's a lot of coconut oil in my diet. Look, I'm certainly no nutritionist, but I do understand what works for my body, depending on what the goals are. So that was it, really. I didn't overtrain, and it's one of the things I've really taken away from the growth in training volumes to what we get up to for, you know, and the Marathon des Sables, and you know, we just discussed a couple of disgusting runs for both you and for me coming up. So my understanding is that you don't overthink training. Don't hammer it too hard. Sometimes I'll wake up and I don't beat myself up if I just go, you know what, I don't feel like the session today. I'm gonna go and work for 2 hours before I get into the office. As long as there's, I'm way more focused on the mental side, because when it comes to endurance, if you're trying to win the race, it's a different story. But if you're just trying to perform and do well in the endurance space, so much of that is mindset. I mean, you know all about this for me. You've written a book on it. and you've been through the Marathon des Sables. You know your fitness levels could be another 20, 25% better or more suited to that sort of race. And you probably wouldn't have performed that much better, because it's so much of it comes down to where your head's at. So I focus a lot more on that side of things than I do on the physiological side once you've reached a baseline of fitness.
I think that's amazing advice for anybody listening that is interested in anything in the endurance space. And when I think endurance space, coming from my background, I think anything 10K up run-wise is tends to be endurance for a lot of people. Anything over an hour, because we're kind of conditioned in, particularly with my background in playing sport, and then, you know, similar to yourself in terms of sprints, when people think training, we think, right, under 60 minutes. So endurance tends to be kind of anything over that for anyone listening. And after a certain point, you just reach that baseline fitness, and it's mindset after that. One of the reasons that I love running so much, and we differ slightly on this, I fucking hate running. Like, I hate it. I absolutely hate it. Like, I love working out, lifting weights. I like swimming. I love cycling, but I hate running. But the mental strength that it gives you when you're working to marathon distance, or even half marathon distance, it's relative for people listening, and you're working to wherever your limitation is, you're bursting through that limitation and doing something you don't want to do. And what I found, and again, you're a massive influence on me for this, because it was effectively you that got me into running, because you planted that seed for everyone that's listening, just to give you that background. And one of the ways that I've started to change everything in my life now is everything that I didn't like doing before, now becomes significantly easier because I run every day and I fucking hate it. Every step from step one until I step back into the door or off the treadmill, I hate every single step. But everything else in work, in relationships, in life seems easier because you're leaning into and just getting used. You're creating discomfort as a habitual part of your life. And then it just translates into the other areas. So I love what you said there about that. It's mindset. For those of you listening who think that you can't do a half marathon or a full marathon or an ultra marathon, it's relative. A lot of it comes down to just having a baseline fitness and then just using your mindset to push you over the line. And Tom's, you're a living example of that. Talk me through the difference between making the transition from marathon to ultra marathons. What did you notice yourself and anyone unfamiliar with the space? Ultra marathon is anything above marathon distance. So 42 kilometers plus is anything considered an ultra marathon. Did you find a big transition from going from normal marathon distance to ultras?
I'll be honest with you, the first one didn't go very well for me at all. And it's something that I talk about quite a lot in the TEDx talk. And that was that first one that I fired that email across to Marcus, and we both went over there and jumped in. And, I mean, the couple of days leading up to it hadn't gone well. Some pretty nasty food poisoning, no energy in the body, blah, blah, blah. But more importantly, it was my lack of understanding of what I needed to do training-wise to move up from, you can feel great at 20, 30K, you can still feel pretty good at 40, and then literally by like 46, the world is ending. So you can go off the cliff quite considerably. But that was just because I hadn't done enough of this kind of like the baseline training, and we'll get on to sort of training in terms of specifics a little bit later. But the step up from marathon to ultra was much more. It was much more of a mindset thing, and you will go through a couple of terrible races, and that might not be your first, your second, or your third, but you know, it does happen. But that's where the beauty of the whole thing lies. You know, talking about the mental strength side of things. I mean, like I said, that it didn't go well in that first ultra for me. The last sort of 10-15K, I was just, you know, just drained, done, hit the wall, call it what you like. I was in a bit of a mess, just kind of like just about putting one foot in front of the other, got over the line and finished it, you know, all good. I looked back on that race for quite a while. You know, we'd done a lot of charity work building up to it, we raised a lot of money. So you come back, there's a lot of visibility around what we'd done because there wasn't too many people in the community here that were doing sort of longer distance back then, that were really shouting about it. So we came back and people, oh, well done and blah, 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 you know, this sort of thing. But I cringed inside it. Like I was like, you know what, I wasn't proud of the way I behaved. I wasn't in terms of, you know, internally, I was just complaining. It just wasn't a good headspace to be in. I didn't make myself proud. And that was one of the reasons why every time I thought about it, it affected me. And I knew that if I kind of left ultra running on a shelf and been like, yeah, you know, maybe it's not for me. Maybe I'll just kind of like leave it over there and go and focus on something that I find a bit easier. I knew that was going to become a problem later. And it's one of the things that I really sort of, in terms of mindset focus from going through the whole cancer thing and what I've done mentally since then. And it's really sort of understanding about how those excuses that you're making today become regrets towards the end of your life. And I knew that if I made an excuse around not doing that run or not focusing on ultras again, it was going to become a real regret, maybe at the point where I wasn't then physically able to do it. So I knew I didn't want to have that sort of baggage. So that's why myself and Marcus both signed up for Marathon des Sables, and that was probably about 8-9 months afterwards, something like that. So now I'd come off this race, which was about 90K, something like that, the one in Wales. I'd come off that, gone really badly, and then signed up for the Marathon des Sables. I know quite a few of your listeners will know what that is, but just top line, it's 250 kilometers across the Sahara Desert, self-supported. You're running, you know, what's it, like six marathons back to back, pretty much, something like that, over five running days. And I'd signed up for that, and then I started to really feel like I was out of my depth. I trained a lot harder for this one. Got myself into a state where I could run a marathon one day, wake up the next day, run another one, and still be sort of able to go to work type of thing. So that was a lot of training to get to that point. And it was a real sort of mindset shift in terms of what was possible, what the body is possible, what the body is capable of kind of going through that process. And there's one thing I want your listeners to sort of take away from this little part. And it's, now I sat on the plane on the way over to Sahara, and you fly into Gatwick, and then they charter a flight across. So I know you've done this. You sit on that flight, and everybody on the plane is it's a fairly elite ultra runner in one way or another. They've all got, generally they've done multiples of these. I looked at this and I thought, this is pretty much my first real ultra after the one that I've had, and it was a disaster. And I'm looking on, and these guys have got multiple Iron Man tattoos all over them and this sort of thing. And I thought, wow, I'm so far out of my depth. I mean, what the hell am I doing on this plane? It really started to mess with my mind a little bit. So I took out a piece of paper, and I wrote on this piece of paper, and I wrote down some key objectives, some key goals that I wanted. And the first one was don't die. And then it kind of progressed from there. And they were all generally behavioral goals. Not necessarily, I want this time, I want to do this, I want to do that. It was more focused on, for example, it was make yourself proud, and help others to finish. And I thought, after I'd written these out, I looked down, I was like, shit, I hadn't been able to really look after myself in the final stages of the previous one. Now I'm saying that I'm going to help other people get across the line, and sort of, go across the line with, not a single complaint, not a single sort of negative thought about the state that I'm in. Just keep your head in the right space and get through it. And sitting on the plane on the way out, obviously, I had got that finisher's medal, and you're looking down at it. And I was like, look, that's all great. And to the outside world, that seems like the pinnacle. Cool, you get the medal, and that's what you run for. And I looked down at that piece of paper, and it was all dirty and scrumpled. I'd carried it with me the whole time. I looked down at it, and the smile I had on my face was to be able to look at that and be like, those were the goals that I achieved from bouncing back from a space that was going to negatively affect me. It's going to be the monkey on your back. It was going to be in the back of my mind for a very, very long time. And I knew that I'd just kind of shifted that. And I looked at it and I was like, because I attacked that negative element of my life, and I've turned it into something that's now one of the most positive. And I proved to myself what I was capable of in a mental space. Now I bring that back over to the work environment. And running a business is very much firefighting. We've got 35 people here in the agency. There's a lot of stuff going on all the time, a lot of good stuff. Problems crop up, whether that be HR or clients are unhappy with something, or it's just issues. It's the nature of running a company. And one of the things that I took away from MDS is A, what you're capable of when you focus on something, and secondly, which is super important, it's understanding the difference between a real problem and a perceived problem. Now, when you're in the desert, there's a lot of problems that can happen, but the only real problem is the problem that stops you from running. If you're a little bit uncomfortable, if you lose some food, if you fall over and you cut yourself, the only issue is if you have to stop running. Everything else is actually not really a problem. It's just it's something you've just got to deal with. And I bring that back over into the work environment. Whether that's with a listener's career, or they're trying to start a business, there will be problems everywhere. But the mindset you need to get into is very quickly understanding, is that going to sink the ship? Or is it just an issue I've got to deal with? And as soon as you get into that mindset, you become a lot less stressed, because you stop just bouncing from pillar to post, because you can look at something and everything could be on fire around you, and your team could be blowing up, and you can look at something. And if you've got the headspace to look at it and go, yeah, it's not great, but we can deal with that. The real problem is actually over here. And everyone's looking right, and you look left, and you're like, that could be a problem within the next 6 weeks if I don't deal with it now. And that could sink the ship. The one over here, because we've got somebody shouting and everything looks like it's on fire, is something that we're just going to manage. And that's the sort of the real takeaway from going through that kind of ultra space.
I love it. One of my probably most frequent quotes that I use on the podcast is, how you do anything is how you do everything. And that the difference between a real problem and a perceived problem, that is an absolute nugget of gold. Because a lot of it is just, sometimes we identify symptoms as problems and they're not.
Exactly.
In fitness, in health, in relationships, in our personal life, whatever way it shows up. But I think that's an unbelievable, I actually made note of that. That's been brain tattooed alongside something else you said. You said excuses you make today become regrets later in life. I love that. I think that is, there's so much gold and so much in what you're saying, but that message for so many people, again, I live my life by the 97-year-old rule, where I try and fast forward to the end of my life and go, right, would I regret the decision I'm about to make right now on my deathbed?
Yeah.
And That's again,
I love that.
It just
serves similar.
It's the exact same idea. And again, success leaves clues. And there's something I want to add here as well, just because it reminded me, because that perceived problem and real problems and not complaining. I just want to share a story with everyone on the podcast. And this is kind of my way of thanking you, because I don't think I've ever thanked you properly for this, because I haven't seen you since. But just to give people a bit of context, a day before I flew out to the Sahara, Tom called me to make sure that I had everything, was how my head was, how I was feeling. And again, I felt good. I had trained coming into it, but I was nervous. I was incredibly nervous because of the conditions of Marathon des Sables. There's so many things that can go wrong. You know, I was having dreams about snakes for 2 weeks beforehand because I'm terrified of snakes. And you called me and gave me probably one of the best pieces of advice I've ever got. And I'm going to share it on the podcast now because it's still the screensaver on my phone. And you said to me before I went out, you said, don't complain. One, don't complain because it doesn't help, but do not complain to anybody who can't help you. And that sounds so straightforward and simple, but the mindset of not complaining to somebody who can't have any effect on your life right now is a waste of time and a waste of energy. And you said to me, when you're out there, by all means, if something goes wrong, go to a medical and they'll check you up, and you can complain to them and they'll fix your eye or they'll fix your foot or whatever happens. But complaining to another racer or complaining to yourself doesn't fucking help anything. And you gave me that piece of advice. And I literally, after that call, I got a big, massive no complaining zone on my phone as my screensaver. And it's still on my phone since Marathon des Sables. It's still my screensaver. It's one of the best pieces of advice I got. And I just want to thank you here publicly on the podcast, because that call meant so much. Because I was feeling okay, but I was a bit on edge. And the call just calmed me down. You just gave me bits of piece of advice like you're giving now. And I just felt calmer after it. So I just wanted to publicly thank you for that as well, because it meant so much and it helped me unbelievably. Moving away in a slightly different direction.
Yeah.
One of the things that I'm so curious about, and people that are successful in all the areas of their life, and you're crushing business, crushing personal life, crushing fitness, so many areas of your life that you're doing well in. I'm always curious, what do the first 30 or 60 minutes of your day look like? Do you have any morning routine, Tom, that you follow or anything that you do religiously every single morning?
Sure. I wouldn't say religiously, but there are a few different mornings that I have. Look, I wake up early. I think that's essential, just because we need to get a head start on the day and we need more hours in our day. So I do get up early, but not as early as some, but I get up around about 5:30. And then it depends from there. I always check my phone when I wake up, first thing. I know that's not necessarily recommended, and I know that there's a lot of thought processes around that. The reason I check my phone is I just skim through my emails, and I just see if there's any fires that I need to deal with, anything that's happened overnight. We do some work with some other countries and some other time zones. So I'll skim through my phone. I won't start answering emails, but I'll go through, and I can tell very quickly just from who it's from and the way that the first couple of words are worded if there's an issue that I need to deal with. So that's the first thing. Then that's out the way. Then I don't have to think about work so much, because if there was any issues, it would have flagged on either on WhatsApp or on email. And then what happens next is either work out, and that can be anything from going for a reasonable run to doing some sprint sessions or go for a swim. I'm very fortunate to live down by the beach in Dubai, and I utilize that. So in the summer months, not so much, but in the winter months, I'll often actually just make a little thermos of coffee, and I'll go and sit down on the beach just in front of the house, and I'll do some work as the sun comes up. And that's something that really sets me up well. I'll sit down and I'll be sat there by 6 a.m. I'll often work through from 6 till 8 and just get on top of everything. And then, so by the time I go into the office, it's chill. I can deal with anything that comes at me, because I said that my specific deliverables for the day are quite often done. In terms of the process to get to that point, so when I wake up, yes, I have a reasonably set training schedule for the week, but I don't worry too much about it day by day. And I also don't worry about it if I wake up and I'm like, you know what, I'm not feeling it right now. I'm going to go and do some work, or I'm going to jump on that thing that I need to do that's, to be honest, is just going to be in the back of my mind, even if I am working out. So it's whatever the priority needs to be. And then I can just move the training session from from morning to afternoon, it's evening when I get back from work. So that's pretty much it. I try and take some time, especially if I'm down the beach. Work is when I go to the gym, I'm always listening to audiobooks or podcasts. So that's where I get quite a lot of my learning done. If you're in the gym for an hour, it's an hour every day that I'm listening to that. If I'm down on the beach, then normally I'm focused on work, so I'm not listening to anything. I'll get that done. So that's pretty much how it works in the mornings. If I am on the beach, I'll take a little bit of time to meditate for a few minutes between sections of work. Just think through, you know, what am I grateful for? What are the key priorities of let's say the month or the year? That just to kind of check in with you know, where I'm at with those things. Am I happy? I think it's underrated to ask yourself that question quite a lot. I think all of us should ask it more. Am I happy? And if I'm not, why? I really like what you said about, if I'm making this decision, I'll probably word it wrong here, but the 97-year-old rule. So if I was going to make a decision, you know, is it the right decision for when I'm 97 years old? So those are the sort of things I think about, maybe not in that specific wording, in terms of, you know, where am I set for that morning and that week and that month and that quarter? Business gets in there sometimes as well.
Yo, podcast listeners, just taking a quick 30-second break from today's interview to bring a quick message from our sponsor, Clean Cut Meals. Clean Cut Meals offer a professional meal prep service and have various plans to suit your specific goals. They also change up their menus every week so that you never get bored and can help you stay on track long term. If you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you know I'm a big fan of using nutritional strategies that fit into your lifestyle and schedule that includes food that you enjoy and then are in alignment with your specific goals. So if you're short on time or you're just looking to get the time back from shopping, cooking, preparing, and cleaning up after meals, then go check the guys out. Clean Cut Meals helped me with my nutritional needs in the lead up to running 250 kilometers through the Sahara Desert in April, and they'll be supporting me in my next challenge coming early next year. A little bit more on that at the very end of today's podcast episode. To get 20% off first time orders, go to cleancutmeals.ie and enter the podcast code BKF. Now back to this week's episode. So there's a couple of things I want to pull out there, Tom, that I think is really, really interesting, just because very, very similar to people I've had in the podcast in the past, people taking that time in the morning to just control their day, because as from personal experience, I found that when I get up too late or don't get my most important task or my priority task done first thing in the morning, that the day can start to run you. And nearly everybody, I don't think I can think of any exception on the podcast, everybody's had some form of taking control of their morning, either through working out, through meditation, through prioritizing their work or whatever it is that they're doing. So a really, really interesting one for people to pull out there. Something else that I would like to talk on, because when I think of running in general, you're like my go-to person. So every time I was like, you know, Tom Watt, blister pads or what supplements should I look into when I was over in Dubai about running, yeah, I come to you. What tips would you offer anybody that's looking to build up to, say, it's relative, so say a 5 kilometer run, a half marathon, a full marathon, or an ultra marathon? Is there any go-to tips that you offer people that are looking to get into running or looking to just build up their fitness? Because it's difficult, and running is a hard, like, nobody finds running that easy unless you're like an elite athlete. There's a point where everyone hits the wall. Is there any tips you'd offer anybody that's looking to go from like a couch to a 5K or a half marathon or full or ultra? What advice would you offer that person?
Sure. Okay. Look, I'm going to preface that with the fact that I'm not a personal trainer, and that, you know, there are other people in your community that are more clued up in that space. However, I've got experience from what works for me and what I've done in the past to get from sort of lower levels to higher levels of fitness around that space. So, firstly, I mean, certainly if it's longer running, people have this idea that they just need to keep banging the kilometers out, keeping it sort of slow pace and just keep building up the Ks, keep building up the Ks, keep building up the Ks. And it's a really common misconception. If you actually looked at my training calendar, I don't do anywhere near as much long distance stuff as you might actually think, even when building up to some of the big races. A lot of it's sprint based, actually. So really pushing the body and really sort of maxing out, and really sort of increasing increasing the capabilities of the body in terms of VO2 max and the like, just really pushing myself to the limit so that when I am then jogging longer distances, it all seems quite easy. And that's really helped me. So it's, to be honest, a few times where I've come back from, let's say come back from an injury, or I've taken an extended sort of time off, and I've tried to then get back to being able to just bang out a sort of a 15-20K without too much bother. I've done it a couple of times off the bat and just felt horrendous. And just being like, wow, how the hell was I ever able to, you know, bang out a few marathons when I'm really struggling on 15K here? And then I just switched it up. After that happened a couple of times, switched it up and really started focusing on the sprint side of things. And initially, when I'm first getting back into the fitness, or let's say you're building this up for the first time, and I know that you've got to be careful with injuries and everybody's different, etc. So I don't want to just give super generic advice, but like I said, this is what works for me, is really focusing on the sprint side of things and just keep pushing my max. And then at least once a week, just start to do a longer run. Let's say for me, it's on the weekends because that's when I find the time. So tomorrow I'll be going out into the desert to go for a bit of a longer run. And then during the week, I'm focused a lot more on sprint sessions and just really sort of playing around with sort of the different training zones, different heart rate zones, and focused on that. But then increasing that weekend run or the two weekend runs, let's say it's a Friday, Saturday weekend over here. So let's say running on the Friday and then again on the Saturday, and just kind of pushing those up as I get closer towards an event.
Yeah, I love it. That's a really, really good advice, because it's funny, I found myself that hitting those longer distances is nearly mental to say that, right, I've checked off 40 kilometers or I've checked off 50 kilometers, as opposed to they don't really improve your runs as much, and they hit your body pretty hard, where the sprint sessions actually give you as much benefit, but just you don't mentally feel as strong because you feel you need to clock up your, you know, marathon distance or just short of your marathon distance. That's what I found anyway.
Yeah, very much so.
And in terms of your nutrition, you said you're very, very fat-based. I'm just curious, what kind of foods do you use? I know, again, you're not a nutritionist, just to preface that, but in terms of what ones work for you, what kind of foods do you normally have in your diet, either during the week when you're training or in the lead-up to runs? And then actually talk us through a little bit what you use during runs.
Sure. Okay. In terms of what I start the day with, and I have done for about 5 years now, is there's a product called Green Vibrance, and the protein version of that is Maximum Vibrance. It's got something like 120 plus different ingredients in it. It's crazy stuff. But for me, that's a product that literally, it's been 5 years, almost every day. And when I don't take it, I actually start to feel like a cold coming on or whatever. But it's made me bulletproof. I literally don't get sick. I can't remember in the last few years ever taking. I think there's quite a bit of mindset with that as well. I don't take days off work. It's I never get the colds and the flus or any of this sort of thing. So I think a lot of that comes down to both nutrition and to mindset. So I start with that, and then during the day I eat sort of fairly small meals, but I do try to eat quite often. A lot of it's sort of quite high sort of fat and protein based, some sweet potato and the like, just to try and get some low GI carbs in there as well. A lot of coconut oil, a lot of salmon, a lot of avocados. Try and sort of eat at least processed as possible. But I'm really not anal about this sort of stuff. So I kind of think that if you're on the go, sometimes you want to grab a sandwich, just eat a sandwich. It's not going to kill you. And at this point, I'm trying to be an elite athlete. I just want to be able to perform. And sometimes you have to go for convenience. So I don't stress too much about it. On the weekends, it's mixed. Normally, sort of, I wouldn't say I do the kind of like cheat day concept, but you know, if over the weekend I feel like a burger and chips, then that might happen sometimes as well. But you know, generally, I'm eating pretty clean, pretty whole. Like I said, sort of a lot of sort of high fats. When that builds up towards the race, again, for me personally, I do increase that fat intake, and I do that through more sort of MCT oils or coconut oil, more avos. That sort of things. I've just seen, for me personally, it really, really does work. When I get into the race, it changes a bit. I do have a variety of different supplements. So I do use the goo gels, because I think once I get to a certain point, and especially if I'm pushing quite hard, the body starts to move into the sort of carb fuel away from sort of like the fat-based side of things at lower heart rates. So we start. I start using a product like almond butter, with based in sort of coconut oil, and then moving through to like the more goo gels. I know a lot of people don't like to use those, but to be honest, the ones with caffeine for me, if I need a kick, they really, really work. So I just keep topping up the carb levels as it goes on a little bit longer. That really works for my body. But then otherwise also sort of carrying bars and stuff as well. So I'm able to get some more sort of like solid nutrition in. It does depend on the run itself. You know, if it's just a, you know, doing sort of like a 20K, then I don't worry about things too much. Anything over 20K, then I plan it out a little bit more. And then on race day, it's a little bit different. I mean, if you're doing a single stage run, then you can, you're able to carry slightly heavier fuel. If you're doing something like the Marathon du Sable, where it's multi-stage over many days, you're carrying everything, then you're really limited with the difference between your weight, weight and calorie ratio, and then also what that dictates in terms of what the food's like. So for me, I took on Marathon du Sable, I took a lot of those freeze-dried meals that, oh, they're not great. There's a lot of crap in there as well. But to be honest, no, for me, it gave me a solid meal. They were very, very light. It was high in calories, over 1,000 calories per meal in those. So that worked for me.
Yeah, I remember I was I brought all. I think you sent me a message when you saw the photo of my food for Marathon du Sable. I had just oats and almonds and protein and. Bag was just under 13 kilos the first day, which is like double most of the people in my tent. So, there's pros and cons to the dried food. I was like, when I was carrying around a 13 kilo pack, I'm like, shit, maybe I should have got some of the dried food.
Shit, mate, 100%. I was just like, I looked at the ingredients. I was like, you know what, fuck it. I'm just going to eat all of it. I'm just going to eat all of this stuff. I don't care. I actually meant to ask you, after the first day, did you throw much of your weight? Because I did a lot.
No, mine went up because I picked up food from other people as they were throwing it out.
You are kidding me.
Yeah, so I was the only one, Tom, on the last day that still couldn't put my sleeping bag inside my bag. Because normally everyone has your sleeping bag strapped on the outside, and then as you get rid of food, people put it inside.
Yeah.
I still didn't have any room because I was picking up food each day as people went along. Because I brought 3,000 calories worth, it wasn't enough for me to keep myself fueled. Again, I was about 85 kilos flying out there. I had quite a lot of muscle. I didn't lose a lot of it in training. 3,000 calories probably wasn't enough. So I was picking up food from people every day. So I had food every single day, and I didn't empty my bag out on the last day because all the lads in my tent were chucking out everything and I was taking it because as each day went, the hungrier I got. Part of my tip, like, because my bag was stuffed to starting with food and it wasn't much better towards the end, but it got me through, so...
I got you through. I was convinced when you told me those weights, I was convinced you were going to be throwing weight. I mean, on the first MDS, I must have dropped probably about a kilo and a half that first night. I just ate as much as I physically could and then just started throwing other stuff because when I first started running, that first soft bit of sand, my heart almost came out of my mouth. I was like, whoa, this is way too heavy for me to run with. So I had to deal with that.
I was lucky in the sense that I had trained with 10 to 20 kilos in my pack on most of my runs leading up. So I was conditioned to carry the weight. That was intentional because I knew I wouldn't be throwing away food.
No, that's smart, mate. That's smart. Well, you and I are built quite differently, so you can run with 20 kilos on your back.
Yeah, true. I'm lucky in that sense. You can run way faster than me, though. all right, taking a little bit of a direction, Tom, just because there's so much value in here, like I can't wait to go back over this episode because there's certain things you've said there that I'm like, oh, I need to take that out and brain tattoo that. I'm going to throw a couple of rapid fire questions on you. So you can either expand on these. Some of these have a little bit more flesh to them than just rapid fire, but literally go whatever direction you want with them.
Sure.
Okay, first one. When you think of the word successful, who is the first person besides a family member that comes to mind and why?
Richard Branson. And the reason why I say that is because of the way that he does business, the way he manages a very large organization. I try and follow his mindset in terms of his ethos is about bringing the right people together. He's very, very team focused. He might not be the best person in the room, but when you've started over 300 companies or something crazy under the group, like what does he know about trains? What does he know about airplanes and running an airline? So. Not so much, certainly when he first gets into it. So I love his ethos of bringing the best people possible around the table. And if you have the best people around the table and you're all singing from the same hymn sheet, then that's how you'll be successful overall and also make, obviously, the people around the table successful. So, very, very much him. I like his family ethos. I like the way that he's not arrogant in any which way. And then now that he's kind of got to the later stages of his life, he's involved with things like the elders. If you don't know about the elders, look that up. And I really appreciate the way that he does business.
Yeah, great one. Next one, what purchase of £100 or less has most positively affected your life in the last 6 or 12 months? So it can be the equivalent to Durham.
Did you say £100?
Yeah, about £100 or less. So something kind of on the cheaper side, but has most positively affected your life in the last 6 or 12 months.
God, that's a funny one. I think it's popped into my mind because it's right in front of me. But my randomly my Bose headphones, and the reason being is because it's really helped with my work. So I sit in any coffee shop, put these things on, and the whole world disappears, and I can really just tunnel vision in for about 2 or 3 hours. I'd say my Bose speakers.
I love it. What book do you think everybody on the planet would benefit from reading? So not necessarily your favorite book, but one that if you could hand it to every high school student that came out, what book would you give them that you think everyone on the planet might benefit from reading?
God, this is a difficult one. There's so many, depending on which direction they're going to go in. Because it would be at that stage of life, there's a lot more. There's many other books that I bring in at later stages, depending on the direction they were going in. But because it was at that stage of life, and I think it's so significant to many areas, I'd probably say, which is probably a little bit cliche, but Rich Dad Poor Dad by Kiyosaki. And the reason being, I think it's just a lot of people really don't understand. They don't understand money. They don't understand finance. They don't understand how that works. And I think if you can get a handle on that, it can allow you to be a lot less stressed in life.
That book, that's one of my most recommended books as well, for a very similar reason. That was my, I did a podcast, episode 100 or 101, I can't remember, but the top 5 books that changed my life. And that was one of them. That was my catalyst. I listened to that book in September of my last year of teaching. So I'd gone back to school teaching, I was 25, and by December, I'd left my job and started my own fitness business. That book was it was the catalyst. It made me see the world in a completely different way.
Mm, it really does change. It changes that perception. And although I didn't really want to go too sort of money focused with that answer, but it's not about that. It's about the sort of that mindset shift of just understanding how the world works. But I just feel that there's so much pressure in today's society. There's so much negativity around, let's say negativity, but there's so much sort of stress around finances and money and progression and all these sort of things. And I just really believe that if you can get your head around that book and you understand how things work, you can make a lot smarter decisions and be a lot less stressed around that topic.
100%, especially if you've came from the traditional thought process as I have of you go to college, you get a degree, you get a job, you work until you're 60, you retire, you travel and you die. And that was kind of my thought process. And this was the only way that life effectively worked. That book blew that idea and blew that paradigm and made me shift that paradigm that's not necessarily the way it works. That's just my reality of my experiences and the way that I've been brought up. And it's not the way the world is. Love it. Great answer.
Great.
Next one. Is there anything that you've changed your mind about in the last few years?
What's the context?
So, for example, just to even give you that example of if you would ask me at 25, 26 after reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad, that I thought the world was this way because of my experience and the way I was brought up. Is there anything that you've changed your mind about over the last few years?
Yeah, there is actually something. And it's we're a little bit closer to home, so personal-wise. I've been, for many years, I'm about, I'd say probably about 6 years. I was pretty much single dating, but wouldn't get sort of close to anybody because of work. And I did kind of use that as an excuse as well, but I was very focused on work, work most evenings. I'd go out sort of once a week or whichever. But I was very focused on what I was doing. And then I'd engage with kind of like the social scene and the social side of things on my terms. And then I'd come back and focus on work. So it was there when I wanted it. There was no one else sort of pressuring me in any different direction, so therefore I didn't really engage too much with a girlfriend or anything like that. And over the last couple of years and certainly more recently, that I've started to realize as I've grown up a bit, got a little bit older, matured, I started to realize that actually having somebody in your life that, that complements your lifestyle around work, that can support when needed, that can that can add value to what you're doing, and you can therefore add value to what they're doing. And it's and there's a quote that's popping into my mind, and I forget who actually wrote it. It's if you want to go fast, go alone, but if you want to go far, go together. Like I said, it's not mine. It's I'm not sure who did write that, but it, I really find it very, very true. And as I've been in business now for, you know, for 8+ years, business is it's growing. It's very fast paced. There's a lot of stuff going on, and I really value the ability to actually have a conversation at home rather than just be 24/7 and potentially burning out. So that's the mindset shift that I've had over the last couple of years due to kind of growing up a little bit.
I love it. It's funny because there's a story I told myself that I would fall under this fallacy of, right, I'll get this and then I'll have that. Where yeah. I'm like, okay, I'll get my business to the level I want and then I'll worry about a relationship. And I never realized that there's certain things in life that can run parallel and complement each other. And I think health and business is one of them. And that's what actually gave me the shift, because I would see so many corporate people I was working with and they're like, oh, I'll get in shape, you know, when business quietens down. I'm like, no, you can do it in parallel and it'll complement one 100%. Another. Yet I was living by this story that, oh, you don't need a relationship. That's not going to help. Because I'm trying to get here in business, not realizing that certain things in life can run parallel and complement one another. So I'm really glad that that was your one, because it's kind of reinforced that thought process with me as well.
I think with that as well, you have to make some very smart choices in that space, because if you get that decision wrong, that can really negatively affect the situation as well, which I'm sure you're aware of. So it's the right people, not just having somebody, because if that if that moves in the wrong direction in your personal life, then obviously that can negatively affect your headspace for work as well. So I think it's very important that it's the right person.
Yeah, no, I agree. Next one. Do you have a favorite podcast that you listen to religiously, or one that when you see the new episode pop up, you're like, yes, can't wait to listen to this one?
Is this a loaded question?
No, you can use that. Besides the Brian Key Fitness podcast.
I don't think I need to plug your podcast on your podcast. So we're going to put you aside for a second. to be honest, there's one, and it's a guy that I haven't mentioned yet either. And it would be the Gary V Audio Experience. Gary's somebody that's in the same space as me. We both run 360 digital agencies. He's vastly more successful and has grown a much bigger business and is kind of taking over the world in that space. But rather than just being somebody motivational that a lot of people look up to because of the way that he thinks, the way that he operates, the way that he does business, for me, it's a little bit closer to home because, as I said, we're both doing very similar work in terms of the digital advertising space. So that's definitely one that I do listen to. I'm fortunate to sort of be connected with the VaynerMedia team and actually was having a chat with Gary over in France recently at an event over there. So he's certainly somebody that I look at as being inspiration in the space that we're in. And that's there's a lot of learnings that come from his podcast. I'd recommend anyone else that's listening to this that hasn't checked out what he's saying and what he does, start with a couple of the YouTube videos around his mindset on life and his approach to business and his approach to life. If you're interested in getting into more of the sort of like the business side of things, that content's there as well. But just understand that kind of mindset and how he approaches things, because I think it's very, very positive, and it's a mindset that will take you far.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite podcasts. I'm subscribed to that one as well. Okay, last one, Tom. There's been so much value here, but I just want to end it on this note. Is there any advice that you would offer your 18 or 19-year-old self?
Yes, there's quite a lot of advice that I would tell my 18 and 19-year-old self. It's quite a few years ago that I started to go through a bit of a mental shift, and that led on to the ultras and then the kind of the real mindset shift that I went through with that first marathon to Saab a few years back. And there's a couple of things. Firstly, it's a slightly cliched one of not worrying so much about what other people think. It's very easy to say, and everybody's heard it many, many times, but if you can really, really internalize that to really start to, let's be honest, I don't think it ever really goes away. I think everybody's concerned to a degree, but if you can dial that back down from 75% down to like a 40%, well, yeah, you're concerned about what people say about you in terms of, you know, reputation and the like, but if you can really dial that down a bit, that's gonna really sort of just de-stress so many areas of your life. As you grow up, it's very easy to kind of get to that space because you're just more mature, you know what you want, and that then flows across business, it flows across relationships. You haven't got time for the bullshit that you do make time for earlier in life. So, you know, if you're going through school and there's shit going on and you're stressed about many, many things, it goes back to like, is this a real problem or is this a perceived problem? When you're younger, you think so many things are real problems. But then if you just fast forward, which is difficult to do, but you fast forward a few years, you realize that you had zero responsibilities coming out of school. You had the entire world in front of you and you can do anything that you want. But so many decisions are made based either out of fear because of insecurity, or specifically around what will that person think? What will this person think? I don't want to start a business because I might fail and then I'll look stupid. I don't want to risk this because, you know, what if I don't make it? I don't want to, and that stops people from setting big goals. It stops people from making big decisions in their life. And you go, what's going to happen is, going looping this way back, is like, it's those excuses that you're making today which will become regrets at some point. You look back and you go, wow, you know, I had an opportunity to do A, B, and C, and I didn't do it because of John or Jenny. I don't even know where John and Jenny are on the planet anymore. So why did I allow them to basically make these decisions for me earlier on in life? So it's about sort of getting away from that mindset of caring what other people think, and just putting yourself out there a little bit more.
I love it. I think there's nothing better I could end that on, Tom. But I can't thank you enough. There's so much value in this. I know myself when I listen back, as I said, you've said things there that have resonated with me, so I know they're definitely going to resonate with other people as well. Tell everybody, where's the best place to find out more about you?
To be honest, in terms of day-to-day, it's definitely Instagram. So it's at Tom Otten. That's where I spend most of my time on social channels. Business side, obviously, on LinkedIn and the like. That's pretty much it. That's where I spend most of my time. That's where most of my space, my Insta stories, pretty much document what I get up to day-to-day and a few of my thoughts. In terms of professionally, Create Media. Create Media Group is the agency name, and that's where most of the professional stuff goes on. So you can have a look at that if you're interested. And yeah, look, please hit me up on Instagram. Always open for a chat. So if any of your listeners want to follow up or have a conversation, then that's where I am.
Amazing. I will link all of that in the show notes. And everyone here that is on Instagram, 100% go check out Tom's Instagram. I love your Instagram page. You put up some awesome stuff on your stories. And also, because he works in digital marketing, it always looks freaking awesome as well. So not only is the content good, but it looks so good. So I'll link that up. Tom, thank you so much again.
Thanks a lot, mate. I really appreciate it.
Quick message before you head off. Just letting you know, my best-selling book, The Fitness Mindset, is now available on Audible and all major audiobook apps. If you're like me and love listening to books while you travel or work out, be sure to go to audible.co.uk or audible.com to check out the audio version of The Fitness Mindset. You can listen to a 3-minute sample on there, or you can download the full book. Also, last thing before you leave, if you try Clean Cut Meals, the sponsors of today's episode, be sure to enter the code BKF at the checkout to get your 20% off your first order. Clean Cut Meals are doing all my food for my next adventure challenge coming early next year. I'll be announcing more about that during next month's podcast, and I'm just waiting actually on medical clearance. Ugh, yikes. So stay tuned for that, and remember, code BKF at the checkout for 20% off your first order. Catch you all next week.